Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
And a good Tuesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5. The game on this, what looks like, probably going to be a rainy Tuesday here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland here. We are continuing to practice social distancing. We are quarantining ourselves at our homes. I'm on the south side. Willie Donick is representing the east side. Chase McCabe over on the west side. Elijah Campbell back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Guys, how you doing?
Wonderful.
Good morning, everybody.
We need some sunshine, man. By the way, I was looking at the forecast. Friday, I'm going to be in a good mood. I think it's going to be 80 degrees and sunny. We need some of that.
I can go with that.
Sign me up.
Get through today.
I know. Well, I'm trying not to think about today because, like I said, today is a little bit depressing. We've seen this before. Look outside. We've seen this. I'm looking forward to maybe pushing into 80 and getting some sunshine in our area. Pretty interesting news to kind of kick things off. I'm sure you guys have seen the Carolina Panthers, and we talked about this yesterday on the show, but the Carolina Panthers have parted ways with Cam Newton. They told him to go seek a trade. Look, the writing was on the wall, and we know that they had Teddy Bridgewater, that they had moved on from Cam Newton, but they have cut him. And what's interesting is, you know, we've kind of, and we're going to talk to Dan Shanka at noon today with Our Lads Scouting Service. And the draft is going to happen at the end of next month, but it's not going to be the way we're accustomed to seeing the NFL draft. Of course, we're not accustomed to anything that we're going through right now. But we've talked about how NFL, while there's been NFL news, by the way, it's not been made official, but the Panthers are expected to officially release Cam Newton today. But they are going about business, but they're doing it in a different way. Their personnel, they're not out on the road. They're not out. They're doing pro days. They're not doing one-on-one interviews. They're not bringing them into the facility. They're not getting to do the normal prep work for an NFL draft. And the big thing is around the medical, which is why there's going to be so much discussion about Tua, because the Cincinnati Bengals can't go visit Tua right now and say, hey, you know, we got the number one pick. Let's check you out, man. Let's see where you are. And just to kind of show you how it's a different world of how the NFL is operating, Adam Schefter tweeted out that, you know, they can't do anything with these guys, so they can't check out Cam Newton. We know there's medical issues with Cam Newton, so they're going to just have to release him and get nothing for Cam Newton. Nothing. And yet they traded for Kyle Allen and got a fifth-round pick. You know, they traded Kyle Allen and got a fifth-round pick in return from the Redskins. Of course, Ron Rivera now with Washington. So Kyle Allen will pull you a fifth-round pick, and Carolina will get nothing for releasing Cam Newton, or for Cam Newton losing him. So that just shows you where we are. Pretty good point. And we'll ask Dan
That's
about
– really interesting.
Yeah,
we'll ask Dan
about all that and more, like how teams are going to go about the draft with, you know, there's going to be a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, because you're not going to be able to, like you were saying, go through the usual checklist that you go through with the evaluation process. It's more than just watching film. You know, Floyd Reese has told us for years just how beneficial it is to be able to sit down and talk to a guy and just ask them life questions and figure out how they tick from that standpoint. And they're not able – I know you can pick up the phone, but there's something about being face-to-face with somebody and being able to look into their eyes and read kind of what they're thinking – and teams are unable to do that right now. And so I think it changes everything. But the
Unless
fact
you
that
have
you have
a very clear, technologically sound FaceTime machine.
Yeah. Yeah. But even
don't
then,
you think
it's
maybe
it's
that's
a little
time
difficult
to invest in one of those?
Well,
it might be.
Can you read body language? And
I was going to say, how much can you really learn from? I mean, you can learn a little bit more than nothing. But I mean, does that make you feel confident if you're Skyping with somebody or videoing with somebody? I mean, I don't know.
It's all you got, right? I mean, you probably have to do it.
Well, I mean, we're sitting here. I'm watching, you know, I've got the television on Get Up, and they're showing video of, you know, it's like when we've been over at Trent Dilfer's place, right? at Lipscomb. And, you know, he's got that awesome practice. We do things. We do the show upstairs. And you can go over there and look down in that indoor training facility. And they're showing it looks like a place like that where Tua's, you know, working out. He's going, dropping back, going in between the cones. Well, that looks great. I mean, that's something to put your eyes on. But, I mean, does that equate to Sundays in the NFL? I'd say that's not enough for me to determine if he's going to be ready to go or not.
Yeah, you need to see more than
that.
Well,
here's another thing I think about, guys, is let's say you're in Tua's camp and the Dolphins or maybe a handful of teams all say, hey, send us all the medical stuff that you have on Tua. We want to be as informed as possible. Send us what you got. Remember back in, I want to say it's 2003, when basically Javon Kearse, whose agent at the time was Drew Rosenhaus, said, you know what? Javon Kearse is a free agent. No, we're not going to show any medical records. We think he's okay. And, you know, they just did not come forth with anything about the broken foot, which is a big concern for Floyd Reese. And he still got a pretty big deal from the Eagles. Like, how forthcoming will Tua's camp be with the stuff? Like, if the stuff is good medically, I would think they'll get that out as quickly as possible. If there's some questions about it, then maybe they'll just sit back and say, hey, draft him if you want him.
Well, let me ask you guys this.
Okay.
Joe Burrow's going number one, and it's a lot of it. You know, there obviously he's an Ohio kid, and all that makes sense. But because of what we're discussing right now, because Cincinnati can't put eyes on him, because they can't do the normal stuff with Tua, they're going to take Joe Burrow. They're not going to take a chance on the number one pick when you've got the other option like Joe Burrow. But what if none of this was in play? Do you believe we would – because, you know, after the national championship game, we all got caught up in, you know, the game, which was spectacular, and Joe Burrow was spectacular, and LSU won the national championship, and it was a foregone conclusion. Here's this Ohio kid. The Cincinnati Bengals are going to take him, and it's a done deal. But, you know, a lot changes from the minute that ends till you get to the NFL draft at the end of April. Remember, the NFL draft came to our city last year, and nobody was talking about – you know, for a long, long time, nobody was talking about, hey, keep an eye on Daniel Jones at Duke, okay? Don't be surprised if he's not a top five pick. Nobody was saying that until getting closer to the draft, and then that stuff started coming out, right? Because of stuff that we're talking about that teams can do, and people start talking, and then stuff starts getting out there. Well, there's none of that going on right now, so there's not going to be stuff getting out there because there's no stuff to get out there. So if they could do all the normal stuff with Tua, do you think this would truly be right down to the wire, nobody really knowing where the Bengals were going to go?
I think it's a great question. It's going to add intrigue, I think. First of all, there's probably a good chance, a very good chance, right? I mean, who's kidding who? That this will be the only thing that's going on in sports on that particular weekend. I mean, the only thing.
Could be.
So imagine, I mean, a lot of people watch the draft anyway. I've always been one that's saying, boy, it's really hard for me to watch a draft. Last year was different because it was here. But now, I mean, the strategy, the drama, the plot twists, everybody's going to be eating that up even more. And like you said, Darren, for the reasons you just pointed out, there's probably more mystery involved than any time before. So maybe more unpredictability, which means pretty high TV ratings, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a very fair question. It's not only a good question, but it's a fair question too, because I think that, you know, you were hearing some reports that, okay, Tua, the rehab's going well and things are looking good. And so if you hear that and you're the Bengals, you might perk up a little bit because you have to do your job because you can't get this wrong. I mean, this is your future for the next 10 years if all goes to plan. And so you want to make sure you get this right to get your franchise quarterback. And so I do think it could be closer. I still lean towards Joe Burrow going number one overall, that he would be the one. But what does that mean, you know, for other teams that need a quarterback? Could that open up the trade market of teams trying to move up and grab Tua, and now you don't, you know, there's uncertainty because they can't get the look at him like they usually do?
Yeah, unfortunately, Willie, I think as we sit here on, what, March 24th, probably, and that's what the NFL draft is almost just over a month away, or right at a month from happening away. Yeah, there's probably a good chance that is literally the only thing we're talking about, kind of like what they had last week. The stage was theirs last week with all the news. I mean, there really was nothing else going on, and I suspect, unfortunately, that they'll have their own platform again at the end of next month. Now, the question is, what the heck are we going to do from now until then?
We're getting real creative. That's why I have a guitar.
And can you imagine the joy of all the mock drafters, the people that put out the mock drafts? How much fun have we had at their expense the last few years? Now they're going to get the last laugh because we're sitting there, oh, my gosh, another mock draft. Let's take a look.
Sure. Oh, I have to believe hits these days, right? We're always talking about clicks. I have to believe their clicks are up. You'd have to be pretty bad at what you do to probably not be able to get somebody's attention with something you're putting out there. Clicks should not be an issue right now because I suspect, and this is not a horrible thing, that we're all doing more reading than we've ever done before. I mean, without a doubt. Speaking of that, it'll be interesting. Maybe here in the near future, this week, we could talk to somebody like an Andrew Marinus, an author. Like what? My guess is books are gonna. This is a good time to be an author, right? I mean, a lot of people are going to be buying books and reading them, or you've got books at home that maybe you haven't had a chance to get to that, now you are. So, I wonder what that means for a guy like Andrew Marinus, where his life is pumping out really, really cool books that people like to read and educating people and talking about the history of something. He and his father have done a great job of that over the years, so maybe we can do stuff like that because, let's be honest, like I said, I think more people are reading than they ever have just because of the times that we're in. We put out yesterday that there was, it looked like when it was first, and it was a former player of his that first put it out there. Nobody else had it anywhere, but eventually enough people would start weighing in where it was confirmed, and we felt comfortable enough saying that Woody Woodenhofer had passed away Sunday night at 77 years of age. Joe Fisher, that was, what, Willie, right at the beginning of Joe Fisher? Is that correct? I mean, those are the early stages of Joe taking over the play-by-play duties of Vanderbilt?
Well, I remember it well because I was the sideline reporter at the time. When Rod Dauhauer took over for Jerry DiNardo, this was 1995, I was a young sideline reporter. Plaz, our good buddy George Plaster, was taking over
hair.
As the play-by-play man. I did have more hair, no question about it.
You had hair.
I can show you.
Yeah.
In fact, I still had a little bit of Roman Yossi flair to the hair as well. Not as good as Roman, but I had a little bit of that. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. those days are long gone. But Rod Dauhauer, as most of you know, was only there for 2 years, right? 2 years, he was gone. And then Woody Woodenhofer took over. So 1997 was Woody Woodenhofer's first year as the head coach. That was George and I's last year on the broadcast. And, of course, we know what happened after that. The Predators came in. I moved on to the Predators gig. Joe took over in 1998. And so he had all but 1 year, I think, of Woody Woodenhofer as the head coach.
Good little history lesson right there, yeah. We'll come back. We'll talk about Woody Ball on the other side with Joe Fisher, the fine play-by-play man for Vanderbilt now. And we'll talk to Joe next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Becker on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good start to your day. So we get a little bit closer to lunchtime. Joe Fisher, I remember him taking over the play-by-play duties at Vanderbilt well. Willie gave us a little history lesson as we wrapped up the last segment because I arrived in Nashville permanently on New Year's Eve 1997. So my first full day in this city was New Year's Day 1998. So my first full day was January 1st, 1998, and that was the year that Joe Fisher took over the play-by-play duties. 22 years, Joe, later. We're both still here, both still standing. Of course, you're still doing a fantastic job at the helm of calling Vanderbilt Athletics. How you doing?
Well, I'm good. I'm, in uncharted territory here. I thought I would be getting ready for a game with Lipscomb tonight and then a big three-game series with Georgia coming up this weekend. But unfortunately, that's not the case, so we're doing like you. We're doing make do from home right now.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? We actually had Tim Corbin on. Let's see, it was Thursday's show. It was Thursday morning. It was after they'd just beaten Toledo at home, and they were getting ready for a series against Kentucky. And at that point, Joe, just think about that little time frame. That's not that long ago. That Tim Corbin was like, you know, it's still, we're getting ready for Kentucky, and, you know, still business as usual. And it was not long after that. I believe it was after we were off the air, but everything had basically been shut down. That's when, well, that's what the SEC canceled the basketball tournament, and so it just kind of, the ripple effect from there. But isn't that crazy? That just,
well,
that,
you know,
morning,
remember,
we talked to Tim. Yeah, how much everything's changed since then.
Yeah, I remember, you know, we played one of the last college basketball games in the country. You know, we played that Wednesday night game, the final game at the SEC tournament. And, you know, they'd already announced it at halftime of that game to the crowd that there would be no crowd to follow for the rest of the games. And I remember running into Commissioner Sankey when I was leaving after packing up, and he and I walked through one of the entryways to the arena. He was going the other way, and we chatted for a minute, and then he said, "So is it on to baseball for you now?" And I said, "Yes, sir. I've got a series starting Friday with Kentucky." And he said, "Well, I hope we can keep you busy." And I think that meant at that point he knew the road we were going to go down, that there was a reasonable chance that a lot of things were going to be canceled, and he was just kind of hoping it didn't go that far. But it didn't take long, as you said, for it to evolve to where we are now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I know you're in the midst of doing a basketball game, and you know, you're not really thinking about that stuff, but there is like a halftime, and you know, before you're in the building, you are around people. Was there a vibe at all? Could you kind of feel that this may be it, this may be the last game of this tournament? Was there that vibe at all?
Well, I don't think there was a vibe at that time that it might be the last game. I think I definitely thought that we were going to be the last game that would have fans. And that was before we ever tipped off. I just had a feeling that that would be the case. And surely, you know, Commissioner Sankey went on the SEC Network right before we tipped off and made that announcement. It was funny because they did not make that announcement to the crowd until halftime. And it drew a huge boom. I mean, the crowd, half the crowd left. You know, as a matter of fact, at that point, they were really, so to say, was there a vibe in the building? No, I don't think so. I think they were kind of figuring, okay, we got here and we started. They're not going to stop it. But they found out pretty quickly that was not the case.
We had Eddie Fogler on the show yesterday, and he ended, he wrapped things up with us. Just, he definitely wanted to put this out. Obviously, watching Vanderbilt this season, he had some high praise for Jerry Stackhouse in his first season and how the kids played for him. You were on the call. You saw them up close and personal, night in and night out. They obviously had some tough injuries, and they weren't the most talented roster. But man, you could definitely tell what Eddie Fogler was talking about all season long. They would fight to the end. What was your vantage? What did you see from this year's Vanderbilt team?
Well, I think that was one of the big takeaways of this team, Darren, and I think the fans really embraced it. You know, they realized that, sure, these guys might be undermanned. They might be very young. They lost their star player, but they were buying into what Coach Stackhouse and the staff were trying to get them to do. It was clear as the season went on. You could see this team learn more about what Coach had in mind. I thought it was interesting talking to coaches and hearing coaches like Frank Martin talk about, you know, the first time they played them and then the second time, and just talking about how clearly much better Vanderbilt was the second time they played them. You know, Will Wade talked about after the win over LSU, well, these guys, you know, they did things, you know, Coach Stackhouse is drawing up things out of other actions we hadn't seen. It was an evolution. He said they're not rolling the same thing out there every game and trying to do it. They're changing every single game. John Calipari said the same thing after the games with Kentucky. I mean, there was a lot of praise from around the league from his peers on how he was able to get this team ready to play for what's coming up.
You've, by the way, Joe Fisher on the line with this Vanderbilt Athletics play-by-play man, Candace Story Lee. We had her on the show not too long ago. What's been your impression of her? Somebody who's been around the program, of course, played there. What's been your impression and your dealings with her thus far?
Well, you know, I actually called Candace's games when she played.
Really?
That's how far back. That's how far back we go.
I think I might have been your color man for a couple of the games, Joe.
I believe that's right, Willie. You know, and that, you know, Clyde Lee was doing games with me at that time, and that goes back to when she was senior. We called her Ice when she played, and just a terrific young woman all the way back then. And you knew she had a bright future ahead of her. You know, and just look at what she's done: graduate degree at Vanderbilt, you know, the masters that she's just kind of gone through, and she's spent her whole time at Vanderbilt and in the athletics department. She's, you know, extremely well liked and loved by the people that work in the department. She certainly inherited this as a very interesting time. She's been very open about the fact that she does not have any idea if this is an interim thing truly for just a few months, or if it's going to be a permanent tag. But she's just jumped in, embracing the moment and trying to do the best she can. And obviously what now is an even more challenging situation given what we're dealing with right now. But I think she'll do a marvelous job. She's got tremendous support from not only from inside McGugan Center, but from all across the campus. That's another factor that's a big plus in her favor. She's been around in her role with athletics and under David Williams for a long, long time. So she is well known by all the people that she will deal with in Kirkland and all across other venues on the campus. So it's just, you know, she's going to have to adapt and deal with what everybody else is doing right now. And a lot of that's just the unknown. You know, we'll see. But I think she'll do a marvelous job, and she's certainly got a lot of support from on campus.
We're talking to Joe Fisher, the voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores. And, Joe, we all were thinking back of our best memories of Woody Woodenhoff or some yesterday. I know I was reflecting on it, and you knew him very, very well. I mean, the relationship between the announcer and the coach is such a special one. You've had a lot in the different sports where you get so much one-on-one time with them. But the word that just keeps coming back to me is charisma. He's a guy that they didn't win a whole lot of games. He was a brilliant defensive mind for sure. But the thing that really stood out was his charisma. I just start laughing when I think back to all of the fun things that he would say at one point or another.
Oh, gosh. He was a one-of-a-kind character, I tell you. And he was one of those guys. And being in the radio business, you never quite knew what you were going to get on the air. And so you were always a little bit, you know, leery, a little bit cautious. And there were a couple of times where his emotion kind of got in the way and he went over the line a little bit, you know, that he had to apologize for later on. Certainly on the radio shows with me were most memorable because we were doing them back then for the most part, I think at Logan's, and, you know, he would show up and it would be like an 8 o'clock show or something like that. And he would come in and he would order a couple of glasses of Chardonnay and sit there at the table in front of the crowd. And the other thing that was the nightmare for me was he would order a basket of those homemade potato chips. Well, the last thing that goes well on talking on the radio is somebody who's chomping down on potato chips. So that was something we had to work our way around on a pretty regular basis. But no, you're right. He was a brilliant defensive mind. In a lot of ways, he was kind of in a league of his own, I think, in that regard. When you think about, you know, the team he inherited in 97, his first year, they averaged 12 points a game. And you know, that was a team that just – and they started out 2-1 that year, as a matter of fact. Almost had LSU beat. You know, he very rarely had teams that had much offensive firepower. The one exception was 1999. You know, that was the year that some of the weapons all came together. Greg Zolman at quarterback, and, you know, they had Roddy Williams in the backfield. They had Lou Thomas. They had Jared McGrath. They had Tavares Hogans. They had Carson and Stricker. I mean, they had some weapons, so they were able to score over 20 points a game. And that was as close as he got to an opportunity, you know, to get to a bowl. They had that game. They were 5-4 getting ready to face Kentucky.
I remember it well.
That game on national TV, which was a rarity at that time. It was the ESPN2 game, 8 o'clock kickoff, jam-packed crowd. You know, had it down 19-17, got the ball back on a fumble, drove down well into field goal territory and fumbled it back and ended up losing 19-17. And you have to wonder, had they won that game, they would have snapped the streak without going to a bowl, and you wonder what would have happened after that.
Yeah, that's a great point. So, Joe, I saw the video that you voiced over that the Vanderbilt Athletic Department put out on their social media channels, and it sort of reminds me of the role that you play, right, when you represent an athletic department, a university, and, you know, just reading, just all around the country. I know every university is struggling with what to do with their students. How do you have classes? How do you make sure everybody's checked and safe and, you know, dealing with the people that have maybe come down with the virus? But I know it was a great reaction by a lot of the Vanderbilt fans I saw with that video that was put out there. So congrats. I mean, really nice job on that.
Well, thank you, Willie. It was wonderfully done and written by and put together by Carl and so many other people in our Stephen Parks and so many people in our department to try to make. And really, at this point, I think our fans are just trying to find ways to stay connected. They understand that we're not playing ball right now in any sport. They get that. But they'd still like to have some kind of connection to the program that they love. And the other side of that coin is, you know, now is not the time to be out there parroting season ticket sales or, parroting, a bunch of marketing initiatives. Well, now's just not the time. And everybody at Vanderbilt understands that. Now, there's a lot of work going on from home and from behind the scenes and planning, because someday we will go on. You know, someday we are going to resume. And when you hit the ground, you better be ready to hit the ground running, because a lot of us are going to be trying to make up some ground. We don't know what the timetables are, but you've got to keep the interest alive. And that's where social media really becomes a big factor, sending out. And you're going to see a lot of that filtering out through the next weeks and maybe even the next months, a little feature vignettes that they can do, just try to keep a connection with the university. So I was really kind of honored to be asked to voice it. And it's one of those things, a lot of times they'll roll a script in front of you and you go, okay, and you kind of rattle through it and do it. But this was one of those that I kind of took a little extra time to try to say, no, there needs to be a certain tenor and tone to this, and hopefully we'll be able to get that right. And as you said, I've been really thrilled and really appreciate a lot of the reaction from the fans who have seen it and enjoyed it.
We're talking to Joe Fisher, the voice of the Vanderbilt Commodores. And, you know, spring practice had just begun. We talked to Coach Mason a couple weeks ago, and they had just gotten things started, and he was talking about Candace being at practice early in the morning. But how does this stoppage affect, you know, the football team? Even though you may not learn a ton about your team during spring, but it's very important to bring in the young players, and with two new coordinators, getting new systems in place, how important is that?
Oh, it's huge, and that's the big unknown going forward. I guess if there's an equalizing factor, it's that everybody's going through it. You know, everybody's dealing, with the same thing. This was going to be a very important spring, primarily because the Commodores were, as you said, bringing in new coordinators on both sides of the ball, a battle for the quarterback position for the first time in a while. It was going to be significant time for those quarterbacks and for the coordinators and for the coaches to try to evaluate where they were going to go moving forward into the fall. Now all that time is gone, and so there's a certain unknown here. What will they be allowed to do when they get back? When will they get back? Is there going to be an extended fall practice, leading into the season? If the season kicks off as it's scheduled to right now, I mean, that's right now even an uncertainty. So there's a lot of work that's going to be done when they get back out of this in catch-up mode. And when you look at this, I think early on you're going to see the teams, if we do kick off in September, the teams that are going to have the advantage early are the teams that bring back a bunch of veteran players. You know, the teams that have a quarterback set, the teams that did not lose a lot of folks on the offensive line, they're going to be ahead of the curve. You know, and you think about it, guys, there were several SEC teams that hadn't even started practice yet. You know, Vanderbilt has been historically recently one of the earliest starting teams in the country. And because they were that again this year, they actually got a few practices in before and after spring break, before it was all shut down. You know, there were several programs didn't get one in. I don't know what the ultimate factor is going to be, but I'll tell you, Derek and his staff are going to have a lot of work to do to try to do things, hopefully in August, that they would like to have done in April.
I know in our conversations with Derek Mason, last year was obviously tough and not what anybody was looking for or expected, but since that has passed and he's gotten the new coordinators in here, and even before the change at athletic director, I just got the sense that he was rejuvenated, and he had put last year behind him and was very motivated going into this year, as you would expect, because of all the pressure that's on the football coach. But did you get that sense that there was just something different about him as he got ready for spring practice?
Well, I don't know that it's different necessarily. He certainly was excited about the year to come. And I've admired Derek for a long time. There are a lot of coaches who don't have the, I don't want to say the ability, but the wherewithal, if you will, to make a change like on a staff when most everybody senses it's needed. Quite frankly, we were talking about Woody Woodenhofer earlier, and Willie will remember this. That was really part of the downfall for Woody at the end. He was so fiercely loyal to the staff that he brought in, so many of them that were NFL guys, you know, that he had ties with in pro football. He was not going to make a change in his staff. And as a result, they got him as well as everybody on the staff. Derek has shown, really, if you'll remember from year one, the ability to say, okay, this isn't working. You know, we've got to make changes. And I learned that lesson after year one with him. That showed me a lot for a young, new head coach to be willing to say, okay, I thought I had this figured out. I don't. And this had to be a very difficult thing for him, especially, you know, Jason Tarver was a guy that had been, you know, chomping to get in here for quite some time. And for whatever reason, it just didn't work. And he was able to walk in and say, look, I've got to go in another direction and was able to do that. So I think that's another reason for his enthusiasm. He's excited because I believe he once again thinks maybe he's found a formula that's going to take them to the next level. It's just going to be interesting to see when they get a chance to go there.
Joe, let's wrap it up with this. I'm just out of curiosity because you told the story earlier in this interview, a well-told story that if you've been in this town long enough, you know what you're talking about with the radio show. We've been doing this a long time, so we've all had this happen. In fact, when Jarrell Casey just got traded to the Broncos, Willie and I just told a story about that was one of our fond memories of Jarrell Casey at the beginning of his career. He came out and did a player show with us at his wing place in Cool Springs, and we had him tell some Ed Orgeron stories, and the next thing you know, F-bombs started flying, and it's, you know, it's awful. And, you know, we've all had this happen. On air, an athlete says something or a coach that the FCC does not approve of. I just want to know when he said it, what was your – because I'm always curious, like, what was my facial reaction if I could see what I did whenever they said it? What was your reaction when Woody Woodenhofer said what he did?
Well, sadly, Darren, he did it to me twice. The first time was, you know, in the midst of a losing streak, another tough loss, and I won't tell the whole story, but fans know if you listen to any of these coaches' radio shows, you take a phone call, almost invariably the first sentence out of the word of the caller's mouth is, how you doing, coach? Uh-huh. That's just kind of where it starts. That's why Alabama named their show Hey Coach. It's what it is. So on this particular night, you know, Woody was in not the best mood. He was into his second glass of Chardonnay at this point, and a fan asked, and he responded with a not worth a blank. And I remember looking at him, and you could see the looks around the people in the seats, like, did he just say what I think he said? And so you guys know in radio, you just move on. You just kind of, you know, you don't dwell on it, just keep going. And we got to the commercial break, and I told him, hey, Woody, you got to keep in the road a little bit. I know you're frustrated, but we can't say stuff like that. Well, when he dropped me was when he came back, and I was just going to move on, go back to the phones. And that's when he stopped me and said, Joseph, which he always called me, Joseph, before you go any farther, I need to apologize to everybody for saying blank a minute ago. And he did it again. And
people
at that
don't,
point, people
Joe, people don't believe
chairs.
Me. People don't believe me when I tell that story. They don't believe
it's
that. They think
true.
It's exaggerated. They think it's – now, he surely didn't really do that. Like,
no.
But
no,
he did. He did it.
Absolutely. Yeah. No,
is there
absolutely
a recording
true.
Of that anywhere?
I don't know. I don't think so. I'd love to find it. But and the other one was the one that he left me totally speechless was at the end. If you guys remember in 1998, which was my first year, we opened 0-6 and then beat South Carolina. And the students wanted to rush the field and tear down the goalposts because it was their first win in a long, long time. Well, 1998, you guys remember, was the year the Titans were playing at Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't let them tear down the goalposts because they had a game the next day. So they, you know, kept them away from the goalposts, and students were irate and all that kind of stuff. Well, we're doing our radio show later that week leading into the next game, which is Duke. And we get to the last 15 seconds of the show. And I say, Coach, great crowd support last week, and I know you're looking forward to, you know, having another great crowd here coming up Saturday. And he said, boy, I love it, Joe. And I tell you what, I don't care if they tear the whole blank, blank stadium down. And I remember to this day, I looked at him and said, I can't top that. Good night, everybody. And so the next morning at 8 a.m., I get a phone call, and it's Woody. Joseph, you think I'm in trouble? Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I do. Yeah, I think that, yeah, that's one you're going to have to step up and take one for here. And so it was, but he was tremendously good-hearted man. Again, very loyal to his friends, to his players, to his coaches. Loved what he did. He certainly enjoyed the limelight. He enjoyed talking to people. He may have not have been the most successful head coach, but not all coaches are meant to be head coaches. But he was a terrific character, and I really enjoyed my time with him.
Wow, that's spectacular. Great, great ending. Good stuff, Joe. Really appreciate you doing this. Be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Well, my pleasure, guys. I got nothing to do.
Well, this is all we've got, so we'll stay in touch.
Well, yeah, don't be surprised if we call you again.
Chances are I'll be here, so go ahead.
Joe Fisher, Vanderbilt's play-by-play guy. We will come back. That was outstanding. We'll come back. More of Darren Donick and Chase next. Little Doors bringing us back from the break. That was good stuff, Joe Fisher. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Tuesday. That's a well-told story. And I tried to
I wasn't even
trying to get Joe to retell the story because I wasn't sure if he was comfortable or not. But the question led him into telling the story again, and I'm glad that he told it because it's, like I said, and Willie, you put it best. We've told that story so many times to people, and you're right, people don't believe that actually happened. They're like, no way. They just think you're exaggerating to make the story sound better, but that actually happened in 1998. I wish we had the audio. Chase, you brought that. Man, I wish we had that audio.
Because I can just hear it now. Like, I didn't know Coach Woodenhofer. I got to meet him when I was a kid, and that was, you know, because as I've told on the show many times, you know, growing up for me, I grew up going to Vanderbilt football games, and that was football for me because the Titans weren't here yet and the Preds weren't here. I mean, that's what I had. And so I did get to meet him, you know, I guess, and that was 97 was his first year. So it was like 97, 98. And, you know, the Oilers were just coming on. And but I got to meet him, and that was cool. You know, it was such a big deal for me at the time. But I can just hear that personality coming out on those radio shows because – They didn't win a lot of games, but he definitely brought some notoriety just because of what he did in the NFL and everything in his coaching career. So
you mean winning 4 Super Bowl rings?
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah. With
he
the
used
steel
to wear
curtain.
Those things around too, boy. He loved showing those to people.
Yep, 4 Super Bowls
you?
With the Steelers. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Sure. Yeah, I'd shower.
He did some great, you know, you think through it. Now, as Joe pointed out, the offense that he had. Because we'll trace it back again to Rod Dowhower. Jerry DiNardo was running the I-bone, right? He was running an option offense. And the worry and one of the things that happened when he left to go to LSU was, well, you know, if we can't just keep doing this, it's not exciting to watch, et cetera. Jerry DiNardo had built a pretty good stable of athletes, really on both sides of the ball, but particularly on defense. So Rod Dowhower gets there, brings Woody Woodenhofer with him. Has a great defense to work with. But on offense, he is pretty much instructed, you're going to put in an NFL-style offense. Well, they just didn't have any kind of personnel to do that. So it was a round peg into a square hole, and they really struggled offensively. I mean, really struggled. But they had some great defensive performances those first few years with some excellent defensive personnel. And guys like Tim Couch and Peyton Manning and Danny Werfel, some of the most prolific passers in the country would struggle at times against that defense. And you guys remember it well, right? There was a game in Knoxville. Chase, you probably remember this as a youngster. Rod Dowhower's first year, 1995. Peyton Manning and Tennessee trail Vanderbilt 7-6 for about 50 minutes of the game. Vanderbilt got lucky. They got a big pass interference call, and they cashed in. They score. Tennessee comes back and scores and misses the extra point. So it's 7-6 for about 50 minutes because Peyton Manning just cannot find a way to solve Woody Woodenhofer's defense. And they ended up winning it 12-7. They finally scored with about 5 minutes to go to win it. So there were a few times that Peyton Manning really struggled against Woody. And Woody Woodenhofer, I remember he used to say this all the time. He goes, "I used to do it to his dad all the time in the NFL. This was easy."
Would Hi Lewis have played for him in Vanderbilt?
Yes. Yeah, Hi Lewis was on those teams for sure.
Okay. Yeah, he was a teacher of mine at FRA.
Oh, yeah, great guy. Great guy. Yeah. He was usually a backup. I think he started one game, but he was on all those teams for sure.
I will say this. I had not heard the story of the South Carolina win and the students wanting to tear down the goalpost, but the Titans had a home game the next day. I had not heard that story before, and I'm shocked 22 years later that I had never heard that story where, you know, they wouldn't let them do it. And that's right, because the Titans were indeed playing their home games there in 98. I remember that well because here's
what happened. They had gone the streak that was broken that night was an SEC losing streak. I can't remember how long it went, but it was 16, 17 games. I think they had lost all of them the year before, something like that. The reason I remember it well is because the game was at noon the next day. The Tennessee Oilers were playing.
Yeah.
Right? This was a Saturday night game against an awful South Carolina team, which ended up getting, I think his name was Brad Scott. He was a Bobby Bowden Florida State assistant that was failing miserably. Lou Holtz came in the next year and replaced him. There's a little history lesson for you. But they were worse than Vanderbilt. So Vanderbilt beats South Carolina, stops the streak, and the fans want to jump on and tear the goalpost down. Well, the Oilers play the next day at noon. We had a pregame show. You guys might remember this, Darren. This might have been right as you got to town, maybe just a little bit before. But remember the old Rio Bravo on West End?
Of course. Sure.
We were doing the early version of the quote wild horse shows that we did.
I can tell you I remember that. Wasn't there once when you guys were doing a show, wasn't there a fire there?
At Rio Bravo?
Yeah.
Maybe. Not before a Titans game or, you know, an Oilers game at the time. But that was the first pre- and post-game show. The idea was to get everybody to come bring a player or two after the game. You know, George masterminded the whole thing. It worked pretty well. But that was what we talked about a lot on that pregame show. It wasn't the Titans or it wasn't the Oilers game. It was what the heck was going on last night. They stormed the field after winning, you know, to put their record to whatever it was, 2-8 or whatever it was. So it was quite the story for sure.
Well, I remember that 98 season, the last game. I was there at Vanderbilt for that game against Tennessee, and it was obviously a jailbreak of Tennessee fans. And I think the Vols, I mean, it was bad. Wasn't it like 45 to nothing or 40? It was. I just remember it was a very, very lopsided game. 98.
That was
40-something to nothing.
Yeah, that was T. Martin's year when they won the national championship.
Correct.
When they won and defeated, and that year in 98, Vanderbilt did not have as good a defense. They didn't have the same type of team. The offense was getting a little bit better, but they had lost a lot of the guys from the DiNardo era that Woody had inherited, and he hadn't really. And really, that was ultimately
41-0
where he fell short.
41-0.
I knew it was 40-something-0. In fact, Chase, if you remember us sitting in the stands this past year for the Georgia game and just we in disbelief of the takeover of the Georgia fans, it was probably, you know, 85-15, 90-10 Georgia fans to Vanderbilt fans. I would say that 98 game was about as that was at the time the closest I had ever seen. If I was to compare this past year, the Georgia game, I would probably reference back to that 98 game because it was obviously just a sea of orange.
Do you remember what happened the week before?
To Vanderbilt or to Tennessee?
To Vandy.
Well, I know the Tennessee, that was the Arkansas game season, you know.
Yeah, Vandy lost 55-17 at Kentucky.
Oh.
So Kentucky had hung 55 on them.
Ooh. Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, they had a downturn, but if you look at 95, 96, and 97, the prime years.
Tim Couch at Kentucky.
Yeah,
so that,
yeah, no, they were good. They could score.
They could score
a lot of points.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a good point. But look at 95, 96, and 97, Vanderbilt against Tennessee. The prime of Peyton Manning and that offense. I mean, they were awesome. The scores of those three games, I think, were 12-7, the one I just documented in 95. 96 was at Vanderbilt in the rain. I think it was something like 14-7, another really low-scoring game. And then the next year in Knoxville, the year that Peyton Manning probably should have won the Heisman, and a lot of people think this was the one where he maybe could have, put it away. Yeah, he should have won
should
it.
Have.
But the score was 17-10. So they held him under 20. I'm very confident all three of the games, and that was not an easy offense to hold under 20.
Yeah.
Real quick, do you know Woody Woodenhofer's first stint as a head coach, where it was?
His first?
Missouri. Yeah.
Before that.
Before that?
He had
Before
one
Missouri,
year.
He had a head coaching job?
He did.
He did it for a year?
Oh, I know where it was. I know what you're going to say. The USFL.
Oh, it was. Yep. It was the Oklahoma, right?
The Oklahoma
Outlaws.
Oklahoma Outlaws.
There you go. 1 year.
All right. And
84.
Do you know who his quarterback was?
This was right after
the
Steelers?
Yeah, he left the Steelers as the DC and went and became the head coach of the Outlaws.
Do you know who his quarterback was?
In 84, was that 84 you said? 84
yep.
Oklahoma Outlaws quarterback. Oh man, I'm usually up on my USFL trivia. I don't know. Well, by the way,
I'll give you a big hint that he has a huge distinction in NFL history and always will as a quarterback. He was the first. He defected from the NFL as a starter because of a contract dispute, went to play for Woody in the USFL, and then later in his career became the first quarterback to do something.
Wow. This is a great trivia question. I don't know why I'm drawing blanks on it.
Doug Williams?
That's correct.
Really?
Doug Williams. First African-American quarterback to win a Super Bowl. Remember, he was the Super Bowl MVP.
The Redskins.
Five touchdown passes.
Yeah.
For the Redskins. He left the Buccaneers in a contract dispute and went to the USFL to play for Woody.
Wow. Why don't I remember him playing that 84 season with Woody? How did they do?
I don't know. What was his record? Do you have it there, Chase?
I'm pulling it up. Hang on. Let's see here. The Oklahoma Outlaws. Luckily, we have Google for everything. They went 6-12.
Oh.
Ooh. 6-12. Whoops.
With Doug Williams? Although,
I know,
people
that's hard
say
to believe,
that,
huh?
But, you know, Steve Young, there were some pretty good quarterbacks.
There were some good.
In the USFL.
Flutie, Brian Sipe. They had some, yeah. They got some people to come over.
You know, P.J. Walker's like the big XFL name. I mean, they actually had, you know, NFL quarterbacks playing in that USFL league. You know, it's
yeah,
kind of,
Bobby Hebert. If you didn't like your contract in the NFL, that's what you could do in those few years. You could jump over to somebody that was willing to throw some money at you.
Sure. Wow, that's a good. By the way, speaking of trivia, we will unveil trivia. Our first installment of that Fridays at 1, so keep that in mind. Who knows? Maybe USFL will be one of the categories in our first installment of trivia this Friday at 1 o'clock. We'll come back, and we will head west. We will check in with John Clayton. We'll learn a little bit more about Jadeveon Clowney. You know, what was that season, last season like for him in Seattle with the Seahawks? We'll talk to John Clayton, 710 ESPN out there, of course, long time at ESPN So we'll talk to John on the other side to kick off the second hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. That's next.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.